I call myself an independentarian. My theory of justice is justice's pursuit of accord, and someone who uses that theory of justice is an independentarian. And I chose that name because it is it stresses the need for independence, that our participation in society is a good thing, and community is a good thing. But community should not be built on forcible integration of the poor and the underprivileged by threatening them with poverty and homelessness unless they do what we say. And that's exactly what we do. The resources of the earth are owned either by governments or by private entities, or some mix of the two, and many people are left out in the position where they get no access to resources unless they get a job. And that's come to the point where we think that getting a job is synonymous with working, which isn't. That's just what working is in the world today. In most of history, to work for many people was farming for themselves, fishing for themselves, hunting and gathering for themselves, or starting a cooperative enterprise with like people. We can't do that today. Our only access to resources is to go and take orders from someone. And I think that is wrong. It is wrong to say if you won't take orders, you don't get any resources. So I think we need a minimum amount of resources, a basic income from everyone that they can work with as they like. And then people should get more if they do the jobs that other people want them to do. But we should never use a lack of access to the things you need to survive as a threat to get people to do what we want them to do. I think there are many different things that a good academic can do. A good academic can simply be concerned about pushing out the boundaries of human knowledge in whatever way they can, and that might have no relationship to politics. That's not the kind of thing that I want to do. I got into research because I think we live in an unjust world, and it's unjust because of problems that can be solved. And so I'm doing theory that I think helps to solve these problems and that will eventually help to create a better world. However, I think I'm better at theory than I am at activism. I consider myself an activist, but a follower. Not a leader of activists, but a follower of the activist movement for basic income. If they want to accept me as a leader in the theory of basic income, I'm very happy to talk at any of their events. But I'll never be claimed to be a leader of activism, because I know what I think is a good, sound argument, but I also know that that is not always the best thing that persuades people to move and take action to do things. A good activist is someone who, without being demagogic, can figure out how to move people and inspire them to action to do the right thing. I'm not that person, but I will help them if they're working towards the same kind of goals I am. Yes, I do think there's a big distinction between the two theories that I criticize in the book, Prehistoric Myths and Modern Political Philosophy. I criticize lots of contractarian theories, and I criticize a lot of natural property rights theories. And I make the same criticism of both. Both say that they are justified, these institutions are justified in part because they make people better off relative to the alternatives. And the alternatives in both cases, if you look at what people justifying these institutions write, the alternative is people who are both stateless and, for lack of a better word, propertyless. They hold resources in common, they can hunt on land, but they can't own land. We would say they have no property rights in land, and even if they have property rights in goods, it's much weaker than what we have. That's the comparison that both of these make. And so that I'm criticizing the empirical comparison, saying they say everybody's better off because we have one or both of these institutions. And I'm saying we haven't quite got to that point where everybody's better off. Some people are still worse off. And we cannot claim these institutions are justified until we've made everybody better off. And that's where we're failing. Both justifications are failing on the same empirical fact. That tends to make it sound like I'm lumping them together more than they really are. These are two distinct theories that justify what they justify in very different ways. It just merely doesn't come up that much in this particular book. My beliefs about whether there's a natural right to property are really inconsequential for this book. Even if we have anarcho-capitalism with no state whatsoever and pure Lockean property rights, as long as there's a proviso, then my argument is that proviso is unfilled. So even your pure natural property rights system is not working. But given that I'm looking at them both trying to justify those institutions, considering the way they are used in the state today, then I do seem to be bunching them together more than I really am. I will be publishing a follow-up book to this, Grant McCall and I will be, called The Prehistory of Private Property. And this will look more at the private property rights argument, not so much at the state argument. And it will look at the argument that there is some natural property right to appropriation, and that we can see this from history. It will argue against the idea that inequality is impossible, and it will argue against the idea that capitalism is more consistent with negative freedom than any other system. So that one is more looking at that natural rights argument. Well, in this particular book, the Prehistoric Myths book, the argument is not so much my argument. It's not my criteria of what justifies the state. It is their criteria. They said we've got to fulfill this proviso, and we haven't. That's not necessarily, I'm not saying whether that proviso is good or not. I'm just saying they have falsely claimed that we fulfilled it, and we need to take this proviso more seriously and realize we've got to do more to fulfill it. Now, I have other reasons for arguing for other standards of treatment of the poor, but this proviso is not so bad. The proviso gets us a long way in the direction where I'm trying to go, and one of the things that people who rely so much on this proviso want to ignore is freedom. The so-called libertarians say they're all about freedom. What we want is freedom. Everybody's got to be able to control their own lives. Nobody gets to control your life for them. But when they say the proviso was fulfilled, they almost always, or I think always, move to welfare. Oh, well, you're better off. Well, even if you're better off, are you more free? To be consistent with their own theory, the proviso should be in freedom terms. But what we have in stateless societies, the type that indigenous people have lived in various places around the world for hundreds of thousands of years, not the more developed indigenous peoples like the Aztecs or something. When I'm talking to people who are living in small group nomadic hunter-gathering societies that don't store food, the very loosest of human associations, you find that people never have to follow an order in their life. They get up, they want to hunt, they hunt. They don't want to hunt, they don't hunt. They want to go fishing, they can go fishing. They are their own boss 24 hours a day. And that's true of a lot of subsistence farmers, right through very close to the present. Even some peasants under the feudal system, even some of them on a day-to-day basis, although they were unjustly taxed, even very much they were their own boss. Well, I'm more of a farmer or more of a herder, I do this much farming, that herding. They often didn't have a boss on a day-to-day basis. We have taken away the option for people to live without a boss and said that that work is obeying a boss. You don't get anything unless you do what a boss says. And that, I believe, is wrong. Someone is not entitled to my labor unless I, as a free person who has a realistic choice to do otherwise, says I want to sell my labor. And when we're threatening people with homelessness and destitution, which is clearly worse off than our distant ancestors were. Our distant ancestors were free to drink clean water out of streams, free to catch to catch fish out of the same river in Paris or out of the Hudson River in New York. And now those rivers are polluted. We cannot drink out of them. We cannot fish out of them. We're not allowed to build our own shelters near to them. So if we refuse or are unable to do the things that people order us to do on the job, we are left without those things and clearly worse off. And I think it's wrong to put people in that contingent. And we need a basic income that's high enough to give people independence. That means to give them the power to say no to jobs they don't want. If you want my labor, make it so I want to say yes. Don't make it impossible for me to say no. I'm glad you asked that question because I realized I got sort of off on a tangent when you first asked about the place of independentarianism in the history of political thought, because it draws so many influences from various places that it is hard to pin down. It is above all Paineist, inspired by Thomas Paine. The idea that we are denied access to resources by other people in a way that they shouldn't, and we should have independent access to resources to use without a boss. In that sense, it is Paineist. And that gives it a connection with the contemporary left libertarians such as Osuka, Van Parijs, Hillel Steiner, and earlier people now called left libertarians like Henry George and some others. But I've given up the term left libertarian because I don't want to be associated with right libertarians. Right libertarians, I think, talk a good game about freedom, but they don't deliver it. They deliver freedom only to people who have poverty, and they deliver interference. And very significant interference with those who don't have property. And they've lost any claim to liberty, but they've so associated themselves with that claim that I don't want to be associated. So it incorporates some Lockean ideas of that people should have rights against the state, and the state is only contingently justified that it does this. These left libertarian ideas that something about resources are important. Some civic republican ideas that you should be free from arbitrary interference, but I also think that non-arbitrary interference and interference by a democratic state can be problematic because the democratic state doesn't always have the best interests of its least advantage at heart because they don't know what it is, because the least advantage have the least voice, and we're all biased in favor of ourselves. So I draw on these different influences. It is probably closest to left libertarianism, but it draws on these other influences. And the one thing that makes it most distinct from left libertarianism is that left libertarians believe in cashing out your equal claim to resources in a claim to an equal share in the rent from resources. And to me, what you need from resources is enough resources to survive without following anyone else's orders. And that has no necessary relationship to the price of resources that happens to be on sale in the world today. And I think a lot of left libertarians fail to realize how variable that price can be and how much our policies change those prices. So there's no one your share of the value of resources.